26th head football coach of this great institution. Ladies and gentlemen, our new head football coach, Mel Tucker.
Our team, we will be physical.
Wilkins again gives to Benjamin. Hit and drop to the backfield. Mustafa Johnson shooting through for Colorado.
Sometimes you just know. And I know that the young men in that room, they're hungry.
An interception thrown by Martinez. It's picked off by guess who? Nate Landman.
I've never been in a game, as a player or a coach, that we weren't expected to win.
Blitz from Nebraska. Montez takes a shot. Drops it in to Chanel. Touchdown.
Welcome back to episode 5 of the Shoulder to Shoulder pod. Not the most fun podcast to do after the first loss of the season, but I think Chase and I both figured that at some point we'd have to do this. Hopefully we won't have to do it again for a couple games, but overall not a great showing from CU's. It's honestly a pretty ugly game, and it kind of just put a damper on last week's win. So I'll just, Chase, I'll kind of let you give your thoughts.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's see. Let's add a little pep to our step here, Brett. We can't be depressed this whole time. Yeah, it was a bummer. Definitely disappointed in how that one went, but you know, there are some other things happening around the Pac-12 that make me feel like everything's going to be okay. I don't think anybody thought that the Buffs were going to go 12-0, make it to the Pac-12 championship, win, and then go to the playoffs.
Speak for yourself, man.
So, look, all I could say is it was coming. I was surprised that it happened here. But honestly, if someone had told me you're going to be 2-1 after non-conference, I wouldn't have been shocked. I would have thought the loss went to Nebraska, not to Air Force. But, yeah, it is what it is. But, you know, we'll get to that game here in a second. But first, let's go over the Pac-12.
I was fully prepared getting into this to just dog on the Pac-12 a little bit. And then I saw that Pac-12 has the most ranked teams in the AP Top 25 it's had in the last 4 years. I had to look at the Top 25 to figure it out, because I was like, how is this happening?
Well, I mean, spoilers, they threw like 4 in between 25 and 20, but you know, that's okay. It still counts. Teams.
I guess good for the Pac. If anything, it means that the Pac-12 is at least looking like it can be considered a competitive conference. But when the Mountain West has 4 wins out of 7 games played against the Pac-12, that's not a good look.
No, it's not. I do feel like that's a little bit deceiving, because obviously I think if you take the best teams in the Pac-12, like the top, you know, 4 or so, what, like Oregon, Washington State, and Utah, and you put them against the top 4 of the Mountain West, I would be willing to bet probably 3 of those 4
are
blowouts. The only one not being blowout being like Boise State, who is also nationally ranked. So, you know, I feel like it's a little deceiving, because a couple of those losses were Arizona, who I don't think is very good, Oregon State, who's not very good. It's unfortunate that one of them was us. But yeah, you know, I think the Pac-12 is doing okay.
Yeah, it seems like they're doing okay. So the first game of the week was an ugly one. It was UCF against Stanford. And UCF just blew Stanford out of the water. It wasn't even close.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, props to us, you know what? Shout out us, pat ourselves on the back for early in the year saying we didn't think Stanford was going to be all that good. And, you know, they've had some injuries, but they've pretty much gotten destroyed 2 weeks in a row now. And the loss to USC seemed excusable until this week. Mm-hmm. and UCF is just, they were just better. I mean, pretty much through and through, they were just better than Stanford, and they showed it the whole time, and they were motivated. You could tell. I mean, I don't think they get Power 5 ranked teams coming to UCF very often, because it's not really a game that has a lot of benefit to Power 5 teams, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah, especially with how good UCF's been the last, like, pretty much 6 years in plus. I mean, they're just, it's very possible that if you're a Power 5 team coming into that game, there's a very good chance you're going to lose.
Right.
The thing
they knew they needed, sorry, I was just going to say, they knew they needed to make an impression, mm-hmm. and they clearly were trying to, like, not just win the game, but win easily.
Yeah.
Like, dominate, which they did.
Yeah, and I think my least favorite thing about UCF is UCF Twitter. Because they beat a Power 5 team, and then everyone's like tweeting at the College Football Playoff Committee, did you see how bad we dismantled Stanford? Power 5 sucks. And it's just like, I'm so sick of UCF. Like, if they got into a game against Alabama or Clemson or Ohio State or Oklahoma, it would be an absolute beatdown.
I mean, I kind of want to see it happen once, just so that we can, like, it can happen, and then everyone can just relax about the whole thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, look, they killed Stanford, but I'm pretty confident that won't be the last time Stanford gets blown out. Mm-mm. So, yeah.
The thing about Stanford that kind of really shocks me is they have a really weak secondary outside of Paulson Adebo, who was All-American freshman All-American last year, actually. But outside of him, it seems like they just get torched. I mean, the Dylan Gabriel, who's the UCF quarterback, I don't know what happened to Brandon Wimbush, if they just benched him or what, but I mean, he's essentially their backup, and he threw for 4 touchdowns and a ton of yards.
Yeah, they didn't look good, you know. Now 2 weeks in a row they look bad. And I mean, Keaton Slovis for USC, their quarterback, looked very good against them, and we thought, oh well, maybe that means Keaton Slovis is you know, the next Sam Darnold, the mm-hmm. next USC young guy comes in, saves the program. But it looks like that may not be true.
Yeah, I mean, the worst part about it, too, is their defense is a lot weaker than expected. And then KJ Costello, the Stanford quarterback, has no weapons. I mean, there's not a single person on that offense that really is there to help him out. It's all just, they're all just at a talent deficit, whoever they're matching up with, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear they're just not the same Stanford team that they've had in the past, even recently. You know, I mean, there's no McCaffrey, there's no Love, there's no, I mean, they've had some, like, seriously talented players come through Stanford, yeah. And they just don't have any of those guys now.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I guess the good thing, I think it initially everyone thought that it was a bad thing that CU switched out Cal for Stanford in the North, but I think CU might have gotten lucky that they got Stanford this year, because Cal's defense looks unreal. We'll get to Cal in a bit, but I mean, I think Stanford right now is bottom three in the Pac-12, and I mean, maybe I'm just going too far there, but I think they might be bottom three in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit tough for me to say, because I still am not 100% sure what, like, I don't really know what the Arizona schools look like entirely. I'm not like 100% on them yet.
That's a good point.
I mean, like, UCLA is clearly bad. Oregon State is clearly bad. Mm-hmm. But then there's a bunch of these teams that are kind of in the middle that I'm like, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna back up there. I'm gonna step off the ledge. I don't think they're bottom three.
I mean, I'm with you though. Like, they could definitely be down there, and we could see in the next coming weeks, because they really don't. Yeah, they have two guys who you can name, and outside of that, it's pretty tough over there. So mm-hmm. I just think this is going to be a down year for them, and the hard thing for them is they're in the North, and the North has Washington State, Oregon, and Cal, who are all ranked. Yeah. So it's going to be a tough go for them for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the worst part about it is Stanford already has a hard time recruiting because of their academic requirements. So for them, if they have a down year, I feel like it's just harder for them to get back to competing in the North, because they have to recruit a high level athlete that's also a high IQ, you know, not highly educated, because they're going to be highly educated.
Yeah. I mean, their standards are a little bit higher for sure.
So yeah, well, it'll be curious. I'll be curious to see how Stanford it's going, to see if maybe they've just had a really rough couple of weeks. Maybe they come back, but right now it's not looking good. So the next game up was USC and BYU. And this kind of showed that Keaton Slovis was not the world beater that he looked like against Stanford. I mean, he put up some pretty pedestrian numbers. I think he had somewhere like 281 yards, which in an air raid offense is actually not that great.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely didn't have his best game. He looked dynamic, kind of like you said. He was kind of a world beater type against Stanford last week, but it just seemed like he was a little bit overmatched. I think he's just you're talking about a true freshman, so he's going to make true freshman mistakes. You know, three interceptions is not going to be, it's not going to help you win any games. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think he's just going to be inconsistent from here on out. I don't know that like three interception games is going to be the norm any more than what he did last week against Stanford would be the norm. I have a feeling he'll probably end up somewhere in the middle, but yeah, definitely not what we thought he might be after week one.
Yeah, and I think the tough part for USC is their next four games are tough. They have Utah next week, USC or Washington the following week, and then Notre Dame after that. So three top 25 teams, two of them are top 10. And my question was going to be if USC doesn't have their AD figured out, correct, their athletic director?
As far as I know, I think they're going to have a couple of people like fill the role right now until they figure something out.
Because my question was going to be if they lose the next three games, which I think is pretty likely, is Clay Helton still the coach by the time they come to Boulder?
Oh, man. I think he is. I mean, that's... I just can't see... Well, I don't know. I think he probably would be. I think it's pretty uncommon to fire a guy that early. I know mm-hmm. that people at USC are really, like, really hate him. I mean, like, clearly he's not the guy that they want there in the future, so... Maybe he gets let go early, but I think he's going to have the thing to stand on of like, yeah, okay, well, so they lost to Utah. If they do lose these games coming up, they lose to Utah, who's top 10. They lose to Notre Dame. Like, no one would expect them to win those games anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of tough to, like, force them out. Or Washington, away from Washington. The only things that I could see happening that would get him out of there are when they start losing to teams, if they start losing teams. Like if Arizona comes in after that tough stretch and beats USC at home or something.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he gets canned then. Like at that point, they'd have a losing record and they probably have already made their decision. Like, okay, this guy's gone anyway. So.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's unlikely that he gets fired before the end of the season unless it gets really bad. Like, unless they just kind of – the team gives up entirely or something, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like 2018 Buffs style.
Yeah, that, I mean, I could really see that happening with this USC team, especially depending on how these next three games go. I think everyone knows that Helton's a dead man walking, so I don't foresee them coming out of a rut like that if they do lose all three.
Yeah, we'll see.
But up next on the docket was Arizona State taking on Michigan State in a game that I did not really expect Arizona State to win. I thought they would cover because they both offenses are kind of terrible right now, but I didn't think that they would win, especially in the way they won with Michigan State getting a penalty on the game-tying field goal and then having to kick it again. The guy just shanked it wide left.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, they got a little lucky. I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit more when we preview their game this weekend against Colorado, mm-hmm. but they definitely had a lot of luck on their side. I mean, they benefited from three missed field goals. It wasn't like they were dominating by any means, but you know what? They went to Michigan State. They played them away. They were top 20 team and they beat them. Mm-hmm. They beat them 10-7. It was kind of hokey. It was a little lucky, but you know, they still got the win and it ended up being good for the Pac-12 because even though USC blew it, they fell out. Arizona State jumps right into the top 25, and it ends up being a bonus, kind of.
Yeah. And, well, the weird thing that is kind of – it's just odd to me is how bad Arizona State's offense is considering they've got Eno Benjamin at running back.
Yeah, I mean, their offensive line is a problem. I think that's, like, one of their biggest things. Mm-hmm. And it just makes for kind of ugly games, kind of ugly offenses with kind of weird numbers coming from them. I feel bad for Daniels, their quarterback, a little bit sometimes. And, yeah, I mean, you know, Benjamin is someone who he's – I believe he's been all Pac-12, right?
I can't remember if he was last year.
He may or may not have been, but he's – someone who everyone put in like the realm of top running backs in the Pac-12 this year, and he has not been having a good year, and I really don't think it's his fault.
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of last year with Bryce Love at Stanford when, I mean, obviously Bryce Love was a great college back, but he had no help from his offensive line last year, and he just looked bad because of it.
Right, yeah, he definitely – yeah, it's a similar situation is what I would say. I don't know that you could say that he's bad this year. I think it really is. I mean, when you look at the numbers, it's pretty impressive. Or not impressive. I should say the opposite of that. It's pretty depressing, like how bad their offensive line is, where like he just can't get open at all. So it is what it is.
Yeah.
But you know what? They still found out a way to scratch 10 points across the board against Michigan State, and Michigan State couldn't do that much. So yeah. They got the win.
Yeah, we'll kind of get into Arizona State when we get to the preview, but one thing that I wanted to bring up is I initially thought that this was a bad idea, and I was expecting CU to kind of look for a grad transfer quarterback next year with Montez graduating, but I think I almost am becoming a fan of what Arizona State's doing is just playing a true freshman and just dealing with the mistakes that are going to happen because it's going to be invaluable experience going forward. And I kind of want to get your thoughts on what you think CU should do with Brendan Lewis coming in next year.
I mean, you know, I think that it's kind of one of those things where we kind of have to look at, okay, what else is coming back next year? Like, what kind of a chance do they really have if they did get some kind of grad transfer quarterback to come in and play for a year? Like, what kind of season are they looking at? But on the other hand, I mean, you think about the guys who have had the best years for us, like 2016, that was Cepho, his senior year, and he came in, played as a true freshman. He was supposed to redshirt, but right. They took him out of it. And, you know, he got his ass handed to him for a while. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder, like, maybe that kind of sped up his development a little bit where he got more game time and, you know, he spent so much time under pressure and playing for bad CU teams with not a lot of weapons that by the time he was a senior, when he had the offense totally figured out, I mean, it didn't bother him when he would get pressure or things would go wrong because it's so much better than what he was used to before and he has such a better understanding of it. So, you know, I think that there are definitely good things that can come from playing a freshman. I think it's just on a case-to-case basis, you know. If Brendan Lewis gets in here next year and he comes to spring practices or whatever it is, comes into fall camp and he's looks good and they feel like he can handle it, then yeah, sure, bring him out there. But if it's one of those things where he's just going to get killed and it might destroy his confidence, then, you know, that could be a problem too. So
yeah, and it's cool that you mentioned Cepho because – I love Cepho to death. I mean, without him, we don't have 2016 season. Right. But the thing about him is he never really had the physical tools that even Steven Montez, but Brendan Lewis has. He wasn't as athletic as Brendan Lewis is currently. And I think Brendan Lewis has a better arm and better, I mean, just more, a higher ceiling, I guess. And so if he can come in and get that experience like Cepho did, I think it'd pay dividends going forward. But the only problem is, Game 2 of 2020, or no, not game 2, excuse me, game 3? Who is it?
Are you talking about A&M?
A&M, it's game 3. They go down to College Station, and you're playing what's probably going to be a top 15 Texas A&M team. That's a tough game for a true freshman to come into.
Yeah, talk about getting thrown in the fire. you kind of come in being like, all right, good, you played one college game, awesome, that'll be against, or you played two. He'll have played two at that point. One will be CSU, right? And one will be
Fresno State's the other one, which is not Fresno probably not going to be a cakewalk.
Right. So, I mean, it's going to be kind of a trial by fire thing if that's what they decide to go with. So, you know, I feel like Mel Tucker and the coaching staff, I think that they're smart enough that they can look at it and decide if they feel like this guy is ready for it or not, if he could handle it or not, you know?
Yeah. So
we'll see. I mean, like, on one hand, yeah, that would suck. It's like, hey, you're going into the football country in Texas and you're going to play one of the best teams in the country and it's only your third start ever and you're probably going to get killed. But on the other hand, you know, I would be willing to bet a lot of the teams in the Pac-12 probably look easy after you're staring at Texas A&M at College Station. So
I think that's exactly the way I kind of view it. But that's something that we'll probably get into a lot more as next season approaches in the off season. But I just kind of wanted to pose that question, see what your thoughts were. So the next game after that was Utah, and they played, who was it that they played? They played Idaho State.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, they just did what Utah does. They don't blow, I mean, they blow teams out, but it's not because they're putting up ridiculous points on offense. It's because their defense is just so unbelievably stingy.
Yeah, I mean, similar to last week, it was just kind of like a slow death. They just slowly beat you down until you can't fight any longer. And then before you know it, they've got 30 points and you don't. Mm-hmm.
And so. I see a lot of people criticizing Huntley. Well, at least not now, but before the game, before the season and maybe a game or two in, people were criticizing Huntley because they didn't think he was a really good quarterback, but I think he's just doing exactly what they need him to do, and he's not being stupid and careless with the football. He's putting enough points on the board that the defense can hold him to, you know, I mean, they only score 31 points, but their defense doesn't need many more points than that to hold another team under that. So I think that he's doing exactly what Whittingham needs him to do, and that's, and you can't criticize a guy for just not being that good when he's doing exactly what he needs to do.
Yeah, I mean, what, he threw 19 passes in this game and had 282 yards, 3 touchdowns. It's Idaho State, so yeah, they're not going to be a good team, but I think that's pretty, like, that would be ideal for them. All he has to do is play well enough and not turn the ball over, and their defense is going to carry them to wins. And I think that probably down the line, they'll have wins that don't look dominating, and I think people will probably question them a little bit because their offense might not be exceptional, but I do think that they're still going to keep finding ways to beat teams just because that defense really is that good.
So. Yeah, and just to compliment Huntley, they've got a top Pac-12 running back, probably a top 10 running back in the country, maybe top 15. I don't know how overzealous I'm getting with that, but I think Zach Moss is a physical freak. I mean, right. there's one highlight I saw where he just completely bowled a guy over, drug him like 3 yards into the end zone, and it looked easy for him. He's just a great back in college.
Yeah, they've got the players. They've got the people that they need to win these games. And I don't feel like it's one thing when your team, like someone that we'll talk about in a second. Like, yeah, so it's one thing if you're a Cal, right, where your defense is just unbelievable, but your offense is like a liability.
Yeah.
Utah is not that. You know, their defense is really, really good, but their offense isn't necessarily going to hold them back. I wouldn't be surprised if if Utah doesn't run the table because they have a game maybe where their defense is a little off and their offense doesn't get it going. I think that's like probably the only way that they lose. But I do think that their offense is good enough and it has the talent that they're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, kind of like you mentioned, on to Cal, they only scored, well, they did score enough. They scored enough to win. Obviously, it was, what, 24 points? 23?
Yes, 23 points, yeah, on but North Texas.
The weird thing was they started touchdown, 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 field goal in their first four drives.
Right.
It might not have been that order, but they scored on their first four possessions, and then they did not score again until they kicked a field goal, I think, in the fourth quarter
to win. They put up, looking at the line score right now, they put up 20 points in the first quarter and then 3 points for the other three quarters combined, and that 3 points came in the third.
Okay,
and
it was in the third.
They looked really good at the beginning, but did not look very good after.
Yeah, I mean North Texas. Offensively. North Texas, they're a decent team. I think they had like 9 wins or something last year. They're a really solid team. Their head coach was I think looked at as a candidate for the CU head coaching job. He didn't get very far, but I mean they're a good team. But to only score 3 points after scoring in your first 4 possessions is, I think that just shows that they can script maybe a couple of drives and make everything look pretty, and then after that they have their offensive coordinator has no idea how to call a game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do for the rest of the year, because I do think their offense is something that could genuinely be a liability for them going forward. As good as their defense is, I just feel like they have an offense that kind of will not possess the ball when they're not good, and their defense is just going to get run out on the field over and over and over and over again. And I don't care how good your defense is, if it spends 40 minutes of the game out on the field, it's going to get beat eventually.
Exactly. The thing I do like about Cal, though, is I will take them if they're an underdog and it's more than 3 points, I will take them every single time because they do not get blown out. That's just not going to happen with that defense.
No, it's too hard.
Yeah. So, Cal, I mean, it's an ugly offense. We all kind of knew that. But on to the next game, which was Washington against Hawaii.
Nationally ranked Cal, we should say. Yeah, number 23. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Nationally ranked Cal. But the next game was Washington on Hawaii. And I kind of feel bad for Hawaii. It feels like they kind of took the brunt of Washington's anger after losing to Cal last week.
Yeah. I think this one was pretty easy to see coming. Hawaii, they got some wins against Pac-12 teams in Oregon State and Arizona, but both of those were in Hawaii. They didn't have to go on the road, and now they went on the road. They went to Washington, and the Huskies were clearly upset about what happened last week, and it showed. I mean, putting up 52 points and honestly holding Hawaii to 20 is pretty good, because I do think that offense is pretty legit.
Yeah, it's a weird offense to defend against. The run and shoot is what it's called, and it's just a weird offense to pretend but or to defend against. But the thing with Hawaii, I think, is it's everyone always recognizes that it's really hard for people to go into Hawaii and play, but I think it's honestly just as difficult for Hawaii to go onto the mainland and play, because they're dealing with the same time difference, but it's just forward instead of back. It's just
right, yeah, same issues.
Yeah, so I didn't expect them to keep it really close to Washington. I just didn't expect Washington to hold them to only 20 points. Maybe the defense is not as bad as I never thought the defense was bad, but giving up 20 points to Cal is not great when you're supposed to be a top 25 team. Yeah.
No, I mean I don't think their defense is what it has been in the years past, but I think at some point in a game like this, like, they gave up 20 points to Hawaii, but really, 13 of them came in the second half when Washington's already up by 30 points. So, after that, I think teams, the usual thing happens where they're up by so much, their defense just isn't going to be as focused and they're going to get beat a couple of times. But I don't know. It was dominant win for Washington.
Mm-hmm. And I don't really expect much less from them against a team that they're just extremely more talented than. So
yeah, just way better. Yeah. I mean, to be completely honest, they're just way better in pretty much every place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Easton looked pretty good. He was 18 of 25, 262 yards and 3 touchdowns. So he's looking like he's not going to be, that 5-star quarterback. I don't think that he was coming out of high school. I don't think he's going to be a top quarterback in the country, but I think he's very solid, and he's exactly what a Chris Peterson-led Washington team needs, because their defense is always going to be able to keep them in games. So if they can just get some points on the board, they're going to be all right.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I still think he's an upgrade from who they had before. So
it'd be hard to not be an upgrade from him.
Yeah, so
unfortunately,
I think that they still have potential to to really do well here in the conference, and I mean, who knows? They could potentially be the team at the top of the Pac-12 by the end of the year. But
yep, so we'll see. Yeah, we'll see how that shakes out. But the next following game was UCLA against Oklahoma, and this one was even uglier than I thought it was going to be somehow.
Yeah, I mean, look, UCLA getting blown out, I think, is just something that's going to happen from now on. I just think they're just really bad. I mean, it looks really bad for them. And I don't know if Chip Kelly's stuff just isn't working anymore. I don't know if it's his scheme or what, but they just do not look right at all. And I think it's pretty clear they're like the bottom of the Pac-12 right now.
Yeah, and I think Chip's offensive scheme is just, I think we mentioned it last week, it's just not revolutionary, so people have figured it out. But I think that their quarterback, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, is pretty bad. I guess there's not really a way to sugarcoat it. He's just not very good.
Yeah, I mean, it just looks like they don't have the talent that they used to have and that they need. I mean, especially against a team like Oklahoma, a top five team in the country, you know, and a guy like Jalen Hurts, the quarterback for Oklahoma, who has all this experience. I mean, he's played in national championship games, you know. I mean, you could just see the difference in class between the two teams was huge. And,
yeah.
I mean, there was just no way UCLA was going to make this a game.
Yeah. And well, the problem too is that, and I don't want to get too into the weeds on this, but Chip Kelly and the UCLA staff are doing a horrible job of recruiting to a place that typically is easy to recruit to, because it's an LA team and guys just kind of flock from the California area to one of the two LA schools, and they just don't seem to get that.
Yeah, I mean, you would think like they're in LA. LA, California in general is like a huge, huge recruiting area, Southern California. And USC, like, it's not like they have USC being this unbelievable dominant force that's just sucking up all the recruits either. You would think that now would be a time where they could really compete with that other school in LA, and they're just not taking advantage.
Yeah. So, it'll be interesting to see if Kelly doesn't get something figured out, how much more run he's going to get. I know it's only his second season, but it's like historically bad for UCLA, and it does, especially with the fans not showing up. They had to like bribe fans to come to this game with like 4 free tickets if you're a season ticket holder. So it's just not looking good over there in Los Angeles. But real quick, I just wanted to mention this. Obviously we are CU focused, Pac-12 focused, but Jalen Hurts, 15-20, 289 yards, 3 touchdowns, ran 14 times for 150 yards and a touchdown. Somehow he's making Lincoln Riley's offense look even better than it did with Baker and Kyler, which I don't know how that's possible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's still early. We're 3 games in, but it does. Early returns look really good for them. And I think you're basically taking an offense, Lincoln Riley being the head coach, this, you know, offensive wizard guy who's turned out now 2 number one draft picks to the NFL and his quarterbacks. And I think you're just seeing that system with a really what's considered a veteran in Jalen Hurts, and a guy who was a starter for a national championship, like a competitive Alabama team for a while before Tua came in and took everything over. But I mean, this is a guy who was very talented, and I feel like people just kind of forget about it. And now he's in a system where he's just free to let loose, unlike what Nick Saban has at Alabama, I feel like, or has had in the past. It's a little different now, but I just think you've got a veteran guy, very talented veteran guy, and I think Lincoln Riley's just letting him go to work, you know. He's just letting him do his thing, whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just Oklahoma's just fun to watch this year. I mean, they've always been kind of fun to watch, but especially with, because you gotta love Jalen Hurts. He was never like negative about Tua or Alabama or anything. So it's just I'm happy to see him doing well, even if it is at Oklahoma.
Yeah, agreed. He's a likable guy, no doubt about it.
So, on to the next one, second to last game. Arizona took on Texas Tech, and Arizona won 28-14.
Yep, they did. I don't really know how I did it or how they did it. I know when we were talking about this earlier, but when I looked up and would see that game on the TV, it seemed like every time I looked up, it was Khalil Tate was either throwing a pick or he was running all over the other team. So it just seemed like a pretty wild game. And I think the numbers kind of reflect it. I mean, Tate only had 185 yards passing and a touchdown with two picks, but he had 129 yards rushing and a touchdown. So he kind of did his Khalil Tate thing, sort of, but he's still just passing. He doesn't look right.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, he's not a pocket passer. He's just not going to be that guy. And if he does get any run in the NFL, it's going to be at receiver or like maybe I don't even know. I guess it really realistically, I think the only chance he has in the NFL is a receiver, but he seemed kind of like the guy that wouldn't want to take that.
Probably not.
Yeah, so. But
he's wicked fast, though.
He's really fast.
I don't know if you saw the highlight on, I can't remember if he, yeah, I think it was an 84-yard touchdown that he ran. And he just, I mean, he made everyone else on the team, like a bunch of Division I athletes, just look like a bunch of scrubs. So I couldn't believe, I mean, it like doesn't even look real if you watch that highlight, how fast he's moving. So, I mean, he is like a serious, serious athlete. I just think, yeah, I don't know. I feel like his ceiling is pretty low as far as like just being a quarterback.
Yeah, it definitely is, but... the thing that kind of surprised me is how Texas Tech only scored 14 points, because we saw Arizona's defensive backs get lit up by Hawaii, and Texas Tech is another air raid team, but they didn't really seem to do much against Arizona's defensive backs, which really surprised me.
Yeah, I mean, that was a little strange. I was really expecting it to be like a really high scoring game. I didn't expect 28-14, and I don't know if maybe it was on the road. I know offenses usually perform worse on the road when they're competing with crowd noise and things like that. But they also, before playing Arizona, Texas Tech had only played Montana State and UTEP. So it's not like, I mean, this was literally their first game against anyone good. So I almost feel like that could have been a disadvantage for them. Credit to Arizona's defense. I mean, they did well. They took it to Texas Tech a bit and they came out with a win. I think it was really because of that, because Tate didn't have his best day, but their defense stood up and held them to 14 points.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what Arizona looks like in the next games. I think there's a high chance that Texas Tech just sucks and they just got exposed against a team that already was known to suck. So it'll be interesting to see what Arizona does going forward. I think it's still a very, very, very winnable game in Boulder when they come here in 2 weeks, but or not 2 weeks, it's 3 weeks or
three. Yeah, I think it's
four if you include the bye.
Yeah, this week they have a bye, and then they play UCLA, and then they play us. So
okay, yeah. So it'll be. I'm excited for that game. I think that's a good one to keep an eye on, and hopefully Tate doesn't break another record on us. I don't know. I guess he could break a receiving record if they put him at receiver against us.
Yeah, geez. I mean, he's pretty much just schooled us every time he's coming to town. So hopefully he doesn't pop off this time. That would be great.
Yeah. So last game on the docket was Oregon playing Montana. And surprisingly, I mean, they scored 35 points, but they only won 35-3, which for Oregon, that seems kind of low, actually.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I actually think Montana is FCS, so they're not in the same division, but I'm pretty sure that they're one of the better FCS teams. So, I mean, that shouldn't mean a whole lot when we're talking about Oregon, but, you know, I mean, they did handle them. I think it's one of those things where they did what they needed to do, you know. They won 35-3, so they had plenty of a cushion, and they didn't give up a touchdown in the game. So they look good. You're right. They didn't put up 77 like they did against Nevada the week before.
Yeah.
But I guess you can't really expect that every week, no matter who you're playing. So,
yeah, I mean, Herbert did throw five touchdowns. All five of their touchdowns were passing. So, I mean, he's doing what he's expected to do. I still don't think he's going to be the number one pick overall, so he's kind of lost out on that one. But
I mean, even if he is, he shouldn't be. But
yeah, he seems like he doesn't do well under pressure, but that's a conversation for another time. Yeah. So on to the recap of Air Force. The Zoomies came to town, took down CU. It was, I mean, another slow start. Like, there's not really another way to put it. It was another slow start, which is kind of frustrating to see after, you know, you think in the first two games when they're actual rivalries, maybe it's just like the emotions kind of got a hold of them. But I was really disappointed to see. I thought they had kind of fixed it when they came out and scored a touchdown and then a field goal in the opening two drives and then just stalled after that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first drive, it felt good because it ended with a touchdown. But, I mean, really when you look at it, like they had to convert a fourth down. And the touchdown was just Laviska Shenault showing everyone that he's the best player on the field by breaking three tackles and running 40 yards. So it was one of those things where like it felt good and it felt like they were going to be in control. But in reality, it was kind of a struggle to make it happen still.
Yeah.
And then the field goal comes after the turnover when they didn't really actually move the ball. So it was like a little bit deceiving start from the offense, I want to say. But yeah, I mean, it was, we could call it a slow start. You can call it a slow three quarters, three quarters plus. I don't know. I mean, they really didn't turn it on until their last two drives of the fourth quarter. So the offense anyway. Yeah. So it was tough, you know, I mean, I think it was a case of they had another start that wasn't their best. And this time they just couldn't make it up, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, I guess three games into it, it's time to actually have some criticism of Mel Tucker as happy as he's made us as fans with the first two wins. He's got to get that figured out with a slow start. And a lot of it is on, well, I mean, it's offense and the defense. So part of me wonders if Jay Johnson and Tyson Summers, the two coordinators, maybe aren't the best at game prep, but they are really solid in making halftime adjustments. But that's not a recipe for success if that's going to be the issue.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think there are reasons why things didn't go well for both that are like pretty easy to point out. I mean, defensively, you're playing an offense that we talked about before being this triple option where you just have to be super, super disciplined all game long. It's like getting paper cutted to death pretty much.
Yeah.
Until they decide to go with a big play. And that's kind of how it happened. I mean, they just run the ball. And then as soon as you're anticipating like, okay, they're just going to run it again, they throw a pass. And of course the guy's going to be wide open down the field. So yeah, I mean, the defense gave up two bombs, unfortunately, for touchdowns. That was surprising. I mean, like we talked about, we didn't think they would throw it more than 10 times. They threw it at 12, I guess. Yeah. So we were still close, but they did go to it, I think, a little bit more than was anticipated. So yeah, the defense, they gave up some big plays in the first half. And I do feel like outside of that, I mean, the second half, they cut out the big plays and they only gave up 3 points in regulation in the second half. So that seemed better. Offensively, I honestly, unfortunately, as much as I've been a Montez apologist, I think pretty much since he started,
I think I have too
for CU, it was a tough game for him. And I don't think there's any way to ignore that. You know, I mean, the guy has given me personally, I would say at least three of like some of the best CU football memories that I have between beating Oregon and beating Nebraska the last 2 years in like the final seconds, you know? Yep. So he has had his moments where he's been great. But the thing that we're addressing now that you're seeing is he has his moments where he's really not. I mean, today, the first half, really most of the game, he just wasn't at his best. I mean, he was missing throws. He was kind of had the case of the happy feet where he was running out of the pocket when there wasn't really anyone there coming after him and forcing things. And it seemed like maybe he was holding it. I know I didn't see it personally because watching on the TV, not being in the stadium, you can't always see what's happening downfield. But there were at least a couple of times I saw people saying there were open receivers and he just held the ball too long. And
many times.
Yeah, he wasn't clicking with it, which I would expect. I mean, I thought we would have open receivers, you know, and it was weird to me that he wasn't finding them. But he just had an off game. And I don't know if part of that comes from, you know, Air Force playing that option. They control the ball a lot. And Montez, I think, has always been a quarterback who he kind of has to get into a rhythm as the game goes on. I mean, he definitely really has to, like, it seems like he does better when he gets a couple of completions under his belt, gets a good drive going, and then And then can kind of keep rolling with it. And I think when he has a couple, when he has a bad drive and then he just doesn't get a lot of possession after that, I think it's just hard for him. But yeah, so it was a rough game for him. And I do think if he hits a couple of throws or he sees an open guy here and there, I think we don't even talk about Jay Johnson and whether or not he's good at game planning, you know?
Yeah, it's all like, yeah, I mean, he just did miss a couple of throws that could have completely changed how the game went. But if he missed a couple of those throws, which led to him just having a totally awful game. And I mean, even the stats, he was 26 to 43 for 220 yards with two touchdowns and a pick. That, I don't think, I mean, those sound very mediocre, but I don't think those even encompass really how poorly the offense and him played yesterday or Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. It was a solid last two drives, I would say. I mean, to his credit, he definitely seems to be able to, like, in crunch time, just suck it up and get it done, however. But yeah, you just can't for three quarters. You can't, like, miss the throws he was missing. I mean, his interception was really bad.
Very, very
bad. It was like, I mean, he had KD open and he just threw it 3 feet behind him and it got picked, you know, and it's just one of those things where it's frustrating, I think, as fans, because you see what he can be so often where he throws those beautiful touchdown passes where you're like, oh my gosh, that couldn't have been more perfect. And then he has these moments where he misses his receivers by feet in any direction, overthrowing, throwing behind him, spiking it in the dirt or whatever. And it's just hard to get a read on him, you know, and the offense definitely, I think, is going to go as Steven Montez goes.
Yeah, it's, and my question, I know a lot of people at halftime were asking for him to get benched, and in the heat of the moment, I think I was kind of one of those people as well, but I think there's a reason that they won't, and they must just not feel comfortable with putting either Lytle or Stenstrom in there, either right now or just in general. And if he's their best chance to win, you got to keep him in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be interesting to see what else we have, but I think it's one of those things where if the coaching staff, I mean, the coaching staff should know, they know what they have, you know, and they know that Steven, for as much as he can have his issues, he can also be that guy who makes great plays and does things that I kind of believe the other quarterbacks in the room probably aren't capable of.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. We're not there. We're not watching him practice every day, but I just think with Montez, you kind of just got to ride the wave, you know. It's frustrating, but I guarantee, and at another point during this year, he's going to absolutely pop off. You know, it might be next week. It might not. It might be against Arizona. It might be, you know, whatever. But I'm sure he's going to have another game where he's amazing. And I think it's just a matter of time. You know, he's going to have his good games. He's going to have his bad ones. We just kind of got to, you just got to go with it. You know, yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. He is what he is.
Yeah.
But I think the thing about him is, just like yesterday, he's the reason, not the reason. There were many reasons we lost yesterday. He's not the reason. I don't want to call him out like that.
No.
But he won't play well enough for us to win. But then there's, like you said, there's going to be a game where he plays out of his mind and is the reason we win.
Right.
A game that we shouldn't. So it's, I mean, it's just what you got to deal with. You expect kind of a little bit more consistency from a fifth-year senior, but just, he's just not that quarterback, and that you can't really fault him. It's who he is.
Yeah, and I do think there was one point early on in the game he got hit, and it looked like he was kind of shaking out his wrist or his arm or something like that. So I don't know if maybe something was bugging him after. Maybe getting hit kind of spooked him a little bit and was the cause of him kind of rushing throws or you know, being indecisive. But yeah, I mean, the team is kind of going to go as he goes. So I hope he gets it figured out. I think he will. You know, I think he'll move on. I think they'll be fine.
Yep. The weird thing about the game, too, was it's the first game of the season the Visca goes off. And
yeah.
And we lose.
Yeah, he did. He went off, you know. And, I mean, they tried to ride him to victory, and he just couldn't quite get him there.
Yeah, he played his ass off. He was running the Wildcat to get that last touchdown, and he was getting first downs when we needed him. He played hard. Just when nothing else is really going well for you, it's hard to just put the entire team on your shoulders.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, he did everything he could. I have, you know, no fault to LaVisca Chenault whatsoever. I think as far as offense goes, he really kind of carried them through what they were able to do. So, I think it's good to see him have a good game like that. I think that bodes well for the future. Hopefully everything can get on the same page, you know. Hopefully we can have him and everything else, and then we'll be good to go.
Yeah. Before we kind of get on to Arizona State, the defense again has been pretty horrendous. I mean, the second half, like you said, was better, but they were getting runs up the middle like with ease. And when you can get runs up the middle in that offense, it just opens up everything, because then they can hand it off and get 4 yards a carry. But if they pull it, everyone's trying to crash in and cover that inside. So then they have, you know, that Remsburg or whatever, who runs like a 4.3 40, was just taking off because people were crashing inside to try and help there. And then he had a wide open outside.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a good day for like the defensive line, I would say. I think we had like 3 tackles for loss the whole game or something. So they just, the defense in general, it was a struggle. And I think that's what we expected it to be. That said, I mean, they gave up 23 points. And if someone had told me before, in regulation, I should say, they gave up 23 points. And if someone had told me they gave up 23 points to Air Force before the game, I would have said, okay, that's fine. I'm assuming we score 42 or more and we win easily, you know? So I agree. It's frustrating. It's frustrating how it happened, but I do feel like they did what I, at least in my mind, what I expected. I maybe one less long touchdown pass, but other than that, I mean, I think they did what I expected. Overtime was a bummer. Just letting them go one play with the touchdown, that just sucks. I mean, that was totally demoralizing. But I think the only reason why they even had the opportunity to go into overtime is because the defense did play better in that second half, and they did play better, especially those last 2 Air Force drives to kind of hold them finally. So
that is a good point. I mean, like you said, they scored 23, which when Air Force scores 23, I mean, everyone was freaking out about the Air Force offense and how it, you know, it'd make the game really hard, but it wasn't the Air Force offense that caused the issues. It was the CU offense not being able to score. Right. And they did give up a lot of big plays, but at the end of the day, points are what matters. And they only gave up 23, which CU should be able to score more than that. And they just didn't.
Right. I mean, and there were guys who had good games. I mean, Onu is just an animal. That guy just seems like he's forcing turnovers left and right. You know, Maddox, I thought he did get beat, I believe, on one of the passing touchdowns. I think it was his man, which was unfortunate. But outside of that, I mean, he was all over the place making tackles before he got injured. So, you know, they had some good players, some guys who had good games. I think it was just a struggle for them. I think it's just a frustrating offense to play, you know? I mean, you're talking about guys like Mustafa Johnson, especially the line, I would say, in particular, or like pass rushers in general. I think it's just a frustrating thing for them to have to play against. You know, they want to get in the backfield, they want to hit the quarterback or tackle the running back for a loss, and the Air Force offense just doesn't really allow you to do that. You have to like sit back and kind of wait and watch and see how things are going to happen. I think that's just difficult for guys like them.
Yeah, I think you're right. And unfortunately, they didn't have, they only dropped back to pass 12 times, but there was no pass rush at any point. I mean, you had pretty much all day to throw, which anybody can really sit back and do and make those throws.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like totally a shock after seeing run play after run play. They finally dropped back for a pass. You almost can't believe it, you know? So, yeah, that was tough. It was a tough game for them. And I'm just glad they don't have to play Air Force again. Yeah. I would be happy if they never played Air Force again. I think that watching that team play is just one of the most frustrating things ever.
It really is. And yeah, they've got the one in 2022 or something. And then
I wouldn't
mind if they never scheduled it again.
I wouldn't either. I mean, credit to Air Force, like all respect to Air Force, but God, I would be happy if they never played them again.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we were talking about everything that CU did that was poor, but I legitimately think that Air Force could be a very solid Mountain West Conference team. I think they're going to give Boise a run for their money this weekend. And then, I mean, who knows? I don't know the divisions well enough to tell whether they're in Boise States or not, but I could see them contending to get to the Pac, or to the Mountain West Conference Championship.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they play Boise State next, so it's kind of like we'll find out if they're real or not very quickly. But I think those are just hard teams to play. I mean, you know, all of the triple option teams. I mean, Army almost beat Michigan the other day, you know? And
yeah,
I just think these teams are very, very difficult to play. And should CU have beat them? I think probably. I think they had plenty of opportunities to do it, and they just couldn't pull it off. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, I think Air Force was, you know, they were the more disciplined team this weekend, and they executed their game plan how they wanted to do it, and they made it happen. So credit to them.
Credit to them indeed.
It is what it is.
Yeah. But
man, that sucked.
it did suck. But, you know, like we mentioned before, 2-1 can't really, I mean, 2-1 is fine going into Pac-12 play with how weak the Pac-12 South specifically looks. I think 6 games, 7 games, possibly 8 is still very realistic with this team. Just got to get over the slow starts, and then it shouldn't. I mean, then the games will take care of themselves.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is my PSA to everyone who's listening. The sky is not falling. Okay, it's a bummer that Colorado lost. It sucks. We hate to see it. I know I hate to see it. I know my fiance hates to see it because I'm a miserable wreck immediately after it happens. Like, it's just a bummer, okay? But if you look at their schedule, you know, I mean, going to Arizona State next week, we'll talk about it in a second, but, like, that's a winnable game. Arizona at home, also winnable. I think USC, UCLA, Stanford, like, those are games that they have a good shot at. And, yeah, that gets them to 7, you know? Who knows if they can surprise someone else somewhere along the line, but like, everything is going to be fine, I guess, is all I'm trying to say. Everything's going to be fine. It's a bummer. It would have been great if they had that win. It would have given them a little bit more of a cushion for bowl eligibility, but, you know, I think they're going to get even better as the year goes on. It's a new coach. It's a new system. We can't forget about all that stuff. So, you know, they're going to get better. They're going to win more games. Everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for doing that, because I probably need to hear that myself. But
yeah, don't worry, Brett. Don't worry. I'll talk you off the ledge. Everything's going to be fine. All those crazy CU fans out there, don't worry. It's going to be okay. We're not going to win the national championship, but you know what? It's going to be all right.
You are correct. Hearing it makes me feel a little bit better inside. But on to America's strip, or Arizona State. They, like we already talked about them a little bit earlier, they beat Michigan State in an ugly, ugly game. But the concern for me in this game right off the bat is, can the D-line get a pass rush? Because if Air Force's quarterback can sit back and drop dimes in against our defense because of no pass rush, a guy that's actually a solid dual threat that can throw the ball around is going to just tear up this defensive backfield.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that the defensive line should pretty much just eat in this game all day long, because I do think that we've got some seriously talented defensive linemen. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the numbers from ASU, I mean, they gave up 4 sacks, 7 tackles for loss, and 7 quarterback hurries last week. Granted, Michigan State is good. So you're probably like, okay, well, maybe we're not Michigan State. Well, against Kent State, they gave up 5 other sacks. And against Sacramento State, they gave up 9 tackles for loss. So this team has struggled. And you're talking about a guy, you know, Benjamin, who has had huge years before this, and he has not been good this year. And I think a lot of that is because their offensive line is a problem. So I think the defensive line should get after it. And yeah, if they don't, it's going to be a problem. But I think they should get after it. I think what I'm more worried about now is just, what's our offense going to do? You know, is our quarterback going to be consistent? Are they going to be able to move the ball the way they want to in the run game? And how's that offense going to look? How are they going to recover? I think is like my biggest thing is, I just want to see them go out, no more slow starts, a couple of drives right off the bat, get some points, make it look good, you know?
Yeah. And like you said, it's back to the other side of the ball with the offensive line. They got to keep Steven clean off the ground, but they also got to get a push on the line. They didn't really get a push to get their running game going against Air Force, which, and I was surprised they actually do have some guys that are, I mean, they had a 310 pounder, which I found out Air Force waives the weight restriction for cadets as long as they can get under to like flying weight or whatever it is within like 6 months after graduation. So,
oh wow, okay.
And that was only passed like 2 years ago, so this is a relatively new thing. But I mean, they couldn't get a push against Air Force, and if they can't get a push against Air Force, I mean, they've been getting a push. So what happened is my question.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Air Force is a weird game, and I'm hoping that they come back fired up after dropping that game that they really could have won. And I hope they come out, you know, ready to just hit someone in the mouth.
Yeah, they really should come ready to hit somebody in the mouth. And if they can, one of the problems with last week's game too that we didn't really mention was the penalties. I mean, there were so many false starts, so many things that set the drive back, and so you couldn't even run the ball on first down like Jay Johnson and Mel Tucker like to, and that causes a lot of issues because then the defense knows what's coming. They know the pass is in the coming, and if that's going to be the case going forward, that's just going to screw up the entire offensive rhythm. So they've got to get the false starts and the penalties figured out.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they just got to be sharper, you know? They got to come back out and play how we know they can. So just please, I don't know. I don't know what we have to do. If we have to, like, send our prayers to to Coach Johnson, I mean, like, just come on, guys. Let's make it happen. I know that they're better than what they were, at least to start that game for sure. So I think they could do it, but I think that's my biggest worry is what the offense is going to look like and how consistent they're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Mangum is someone that needs to have a big game too. If obviously he needs the line to help him out to do that, but I mean, he looked really solid against Air Force when he got going. Once he started getting some carries in the second half, he was making the most of his carries. And I personally think he's the most talented back we have. So I want to see him get going, and if he can have a good game against Arizona State, that's going to bode really well for the offense and getting the points up on the board, because I don't think Arizona State's offense is going to go score for score with CU if CU's offense can get going.
Yeah, I agree. Mangum would be a good one. I mean, honestly, yeah, I think we didn't talk about it, but the overtime period, I would have liked to see Mangum in there getting some carries. You know, you have four downs, you know, you have to score a touchdown. So that was puzzling to me. But yeah, I think they can bring him in. Fontenot too. I mean, both of them, use them together or whatever, but they got to get someone going in the run. And I think if Mangum can get going in the running game, then that opens up the offense really well. And that's when they start cutting through people. So I'm with you. I think he's got to have a big game. I think the other people or person that you're looking at is pretty much anyone on the D-line. I think, like I said earlier, I think they have the opportunity to have a big game, and I think they need to. I think if Mustafa Johnson, Jalen Sammy, Terrence Lang, if those guys can get into the backfield consistently, or at least, you know, I mean, in Sammy's case, just hold that line right there in the running game, then I don't think the Arizona State offense is going to be anything to be scared of at all. So if they can have a big game, I feel like CU could really, really be in control.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see kind of what goes down from the line's point, because this game, like most games do, but this game especially, with the fact that Arizona State's offense is not very solid, is going to come down to just the line play on both sides. And so it really just depends on how those guys do on both sides of the line. So we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, fingers crossed, man. Fingers crossed. I hope they come out and they win this game and we're feeling good again come next pod. I like happy podcasts more than the sad ones.
Yeah, I definitely started this one off like I was like on the ledge there a little bit.
I think
I picked it up since then. You got me down. But
yeah.
As always, predictions, what do you got?
I do think it's going to be fairly close, but you know, I like the Buffs in this one still. Despite last week, I still have faith in you guys, so please don't let me down. Come on. I'm going to say 35-28 Buffs.
35-20. You think it's going to be that high scoring?
You know, I am worried that they're going to have some problems. I still just, I feel like I can't say that they're not going to give up points because the defense still has in every game given up at least one or two plays that are just big, long touchdowns. Yeah, you know, you're probably right. It probably won't be that high. It'll probably be more, I could say, bring everyone down a touchdown, like 28-21. That might be more realistic, but I just feel like we have the potential to score in the 30s every game, you know? But
yeah,
I also don't think this is going to be a blowout, so.
I don't either. And I actually, now that I'm looking at it, I wrote down my prediction, and unfortunately, I'm going to have to go against you on this one. I think just because it's in Arizona, it's going to be like probably 105 degrees at kickoff, even though it's an 8 o'clock game.
Yeah.
I think the heat's going to be a little too much. So I've got Arizona State winning 31-24. Obviously, I would love to be wrong and eat crow on that one.
Yeah,
but obviously. I just think that the heat's going to be a huge issue.
Respect. You know, I get it. I get why you would say that, but you know, I just feel like they're going to be fired up. You know, I don't know why. I don't know why I have the faith that I do, considering a vast majority of my years of CU football have been unbelievably disappointing. But I feel like Mel Tucker's going to have these guys ready to go, and I feel like they're going to want to really show something. And I do think, especially those guys on the defensive line, they're going to be ready to get after it because they really didn't have a ton of opportunity this last week. They played a frustrating offense. Finally, they can, you know, they can get in front of a pro style offense and make their presence felt. So,
yeah,
I understand the pick, but I disagree, and I hope you're wrong.
I hope I am too. And yeah, we kind of touched on, you kind of touched on a little bit when you gave the public service announcement, but that I think this last week's game is not at all indicative of how the rest of the season is going to go. I mean, like I said, I think that that Air Force is going to be a solid Mountain West Conference team. And when you're playing an offense like that, even if they only scored 30, it throws off the whole rhythm of the game. So I don't think it's indicative of the rest of the season at all. And the Pac-12 South is weak enough and shaky enough that I think it's going to be completely fine. Hopefully I'm wrong, but this last week was not indicative at all.
Yeah, yeah. They also had a weird week to bye, so they had an extra week to get ready, you know. But, yeah, I'm with you. I don't think what happened in the Air Force game is going to be the story of the season. I hope not. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how they bounce back here against ASU.
Yep. So on to the rest of the pack games to keep an eye on. I'm assuming we probably both have the same game pegged, but I could be wrong. I have.
Why don't you go ahead?
Utah and USC. I want to see how well Utah handles USC. The spread on that, which we'll get to in a bit, was only 3.5, and I think Utah's going to cover that handily.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to see how an air raid type team goes against Utah.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think that'll be an interesting one to see. I kind of feel like it has some blowout potential for Utah, but you never know. But it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see USC and see Keaton Slovis again, see how he adjusts from what happened this last week. The other one that I want to see, weirdly, surprises me, but Cal and Ole Miss. It's an opportunity for the Pac-12 to get an SEC win, which is always good. And, you know, I never would have thought Cal had any chance at this going into the year. But, you know, the way their defense is played, I mean, we're talking about a top 25 team here now. And they've beaten Washington away from home. I do think Washington is better than Ole Miss. So we'll see how it goes. It would be awesome if we could get a Pac-12 team like Cal beating an SEC team, because then you're like, okay, Cal, not even top three in the Pac-12, beat someone in the SEC. Maybe it'll help out the conference a little bit. So yeah. I'm pulling for them. And yeah, you know, I mean, at first look, I also saw like, oh, Oregon, Stanford, maybe that'll be a good game. But Stanford is trash, nope. So I changed my mind.
Yeah. I'm not too intrigued to watch this one, but I swear BYU, I mean, I just looked to double check myself. They've only played three Pac-12 teams but I feel like they've already played five somehow, and we're only in week three of the season.
For BYU?
Yeah. Like, do they always schedule like this? I don't think it's – because I know they're an independent team, but they don't always schedule just strictly Pac-12 for most of the season, do they?
No, I don't think so. I think it's weird. I think the independent team thing is got to be strange. They probably play, like, all kinds of weird teams all over the place. So, no, I definitely think it's out of the ordinary.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's just interesting because
they're like an honorary Pac-12 member almost at this point. Between them and Hawaii, it's like, okay, do we have the Pac-14 now or what?
Yeah. When conference realignment comes around, they're going to be like, well, aren't BYU and Hawaii already in the conference?
But yeah. Aren't they already here?
Yeah. I think the Pac-12 itself doesn't have a great slate, but the overall country does. So it'll be a fun Saturday to come up. Watch this Saturday, but we have a new segment that we're going to start adding every week. We talk about it enough that we figure we might as well just bring it all round table into an actual segment. So we're going to go over, Jason and I are going to pick essentially three bets that we think are either locks or very close to each week. We're obviously going to focus on the Pac-12 because that's what we know the most, but anytime we see something that's, you know, a solid play across the country, we'll kind of throw it in here. So, Chase, I'll let you get started with your three.
Sure. Okay. Let's see. I would like to start with Oregon against Stanford. Oregon is a 9-point favorite, and I would take Oregon -9 against Stanford all day. Stanford just got obliterated by UCF last week. They got demolished by USC, who we now know is not all that great. So I feel like Oregon's going to come in here and stomp them. So I think 9 points is an easy cover for Oregon. That shouldn't be a problem. Mm-hmm. I've also got, I feel like this is cheating. I also have black and gold glasses on, obviously, but I still feel good about this because of how big the spread is. ASU is a 7.5-point favorite against Colorado, and I just don't see them losing by more than a touchdown. So, with that 7.5, I would take Colorado in that.
And to kind of touch on that, someone on All Buffs pointed out, and I can't remember the exact number, but there have been like 11 or 12 games. Not 11 or 12, that can't be right. Maybe it is 11 or 12. I don't know. In Herm Edwards, it's only a second season there, but he's had a ridiculous number of one-score games.
Yeah,
he's
only they play a lot of close games, for sure.
And their offense, I just don't think their offense is good enough to blow CU out if it came to them winning. So, I mean, I think that's a good bet.
Yeah. And then my last one that we didn't necessarily share was Wisconsin is a 3-point favorite there, -3 at home to Michigan. This is getting out of the Pac-12, but, you know, stay with me here, people. Michigan has not looked good. They haven't been great all year. They've been, like, underperforming, I would say. Everyone said their offense is going to be amazing, and it just really hasn't been up to this point. And Wisconsin is a team that's known for being a defensive, kind of just really hard-nosed team. They're going to be playing at home, and they've got one of the best running backs in the country. So I like Wisconsin in that matchup too. And those are my three.
Yeah. And Wisconsin's been putting up points even then. Like a lot. They shut out USF, but they also won 49-0 in week one or something like that.
Which is very not Wisconsin. So, you know, that makes me feel a little bit better about it.
Yeah. I think that's also a good bet. And I actually took that one as well. But my three for the week, I think Utah over USC. I mean, Utah's only currently favored. I got it in when the line was 3.5 Utah favored. And I think Utah's going to cover that with ease.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they are keeping that game that close.
I can't imagine Utah's defense is going to give up a ton of points to a USC team that couldn't even score more than 30 or 27 on BYU. So I think it'll be just like what we've seen Utah do the first 3 weeks, where they just win and they score enough to make it look like it wasn't even close, but they aren't scoring 45, 50 points, but their defense isn't going to give up enough to make it even a close game. So that one seemed like a no-brainer to me. The next one I wanted to take was Washington at 6.5. I think Washington is head and shoulders above USC as a team. Obviously, you can't really look back the week before to gauge how one team does against another, but I think that Washington is kind of still feeling that that anger from losing to Cal last week. So I think they'll take care of BYU pretty handily in 6.5. I mean, Washington, I think, will win this game by at least 2 touchdowns. So getting it within 1 is an easy spread for me. And then the final one, I have Cal at -1 over Ole Miss. Ole Miss has not looked very good so far, and Cal, just that defense, man, I can't bet against it, really. I think they're a good enough team defensively. They'll be able to hold Ole Miss to, you know, 3, 6, 9, maybe 12 points, and they'll probably win by 5 field goals or something like stupid like that.
Yeah,
and
it'll be something disgusting, but I agree. I like Cal there. That's a tough one. It's such a small spread, but I do think that they definitely could win that game. So
yeah. So we'll be doing those every week. Hopefully, if any of you guys like to gamble, it'll just be a little insight into why we picked what we picked. Obviously, we're not experts or anything, but
yeah, definitely don't get angry at us if those don't go well, okay? Because, you know, we'll be angry too. All right, we'll be angry right along with you.
Yeah, we're not trying to lose anybody money here.
No.
On to the other recurring segment, we've got Tweet of the Week. Neither of us really had much time to do it. I know I was bummed out from the game, and I think Chase was too, so we weren't really focusing on Twitter, but this one's from Arash Markazi at Arash, A-R-A-S-H, Markazi, M-A-R-K-A-Z-I, and he tweeted out, there are 2 Rose Bowls. There's the one that is the home of the granddaddy of them all, and there's the one that is the home of UCLA football. One is famous for the most magical setting in college football, and the other is infamous for the most depressing. Just taking a little dig at UCLA, like we mentioned, they just had a rough season so far, and no one's really excited over there in that fan base. So I see where that came from, but that will do it for this week's episode. Hopefully when we come back next week, we'll be a little bit in brighter spirits, and we'll have something fun to talk about.
Yeah. We'll have a CU win over ASU to talk about, and I'll be able to gloat about Brett being wrong. So that'll be sweet. Everyone tune in for that. Also, one more thing that we keep forgetting to say. We are 5 episodes into the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast, and if you like what you hear, please subscribe to us if you haven't already, or, you know, unsubscribe and resubscribe, because that looks good too. Leave us some 5-star ratings if you like us. We have almost all 5 stars. We got 1 1-star review from someone who we're assuming is from Nebraska, which, if anything, should just give us more publicity and make us seem like a better podcast. Leave a 5-star review if you like what you hear, and you can leave a review, tell us what you like, leave comments, please. You know, just keep listening. Yep. Oh, and tell other people about us, please.
Yeah. Anytime you can tell anybody about us, it helps us out. Other than that, hit us up at the mailbag. Still haven't got anything yet. We're still hoping somebody messages us. But shouldertoshoulderpod@gmail.com. But otherwise, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And as always, go Buffs.
Let's go Buffs.